50 years after the Fair Housing Act was signed, banning racial discrimination in housing, we are exploring cost and availability of affordable housing. And over the past couple months, we visited cities and towns across Georgia where the post-recovery development boom is changing the availability and landscape of housing. Popular perception and plenty of data support the idea that housing discrimination remains a prevalent problem in the South and across the country. So with us today are a couple of people working with organizations on the ground aiming to change that. Bambi Hayes Brown is president and CEO of Georgia Advancing Communities Together. Good morning, Bambi.
Good morning.
And we also have with us Eric Provitt. He is staff attorney with the Atlanta Volunteer Lawyers Foundation. He's also a fellow at the Georgia Housing Corps. And Eric, thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We've got Dan Immerglock. These guys are working on the ground. Dan is also an on-the-ground researcher, but he is the professor at the Urban Studies Institute at Georgia State University. And he is helping us get this a little bit of data perspective on what we're talking about. Dan, great to have you with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for sticking around. So, Bambi, you've spent the last 20 years working on housing in communities around Georgia. What types of discrimination do people still face?
Unfortunately, people face all types of discrimination as it relates to race, disabilities, as well as income discrimination, as you heard from the stories.
Yeah. So how does that show up for people like Ossette and like Tyra? Are they not able to find housing in the first place?
That is correct, especially for the housing choice voucher holders. They because you have the prices of the rental homes that are going up, they're so expensive right now. And where landlords previously would rent a house for $400, now they can rent that same house on the regular market for $1,500. And people who have those Section 8 vouchers, they're having harder and harder times to find those affordable units or find landlords that will take their Section 8 vouchers. And then unfortunately, their time will run out, and then they are now at risk of losing their voucher, even though they can file for an extension with their local housing authority. Oftentimes, the time still run out, and then that family and oftentimes are left looking for alternative housing arrangements, such as living in extended stay hotels or doubling up with friends and family.
Mm-hmm. A lot of that going on. This is happening for, you know, people in the middle class. They feel like they're getting priced out of neighborhoods. So never mind people who are in the low income bracket. Eric, you're the Georgia Housing Corp. That's a fairly new program. That's what you're a part of. So what are they doing to help people in this situation?
And so the Georgia Housing Corp is a unique program in that it was kind of birthed out of a settlement between Bank of America and the Department of Justice. Uniquely and together, we're focusing on different areas of preserving affordable housing in the state of Georgia and throughout all of Georgia. I work with tenants. We have people that are working in criminal justice and property rights. So it's unique in that sense.
And you're a lawyer. So
I am,
at
least.
So this is actually a program to help people with legal aid. It's not just seeking housing.
It's not. And so we actually, my fellowship focuses on individuals that already have housing, and I'm working to preserve that by protecting them as they go through the legal process. And so we provide free legal representation. We also advocate for clients if landlords aren't fixing the things that they should under the Georgia Code.
And Dan, we heard a historic perspective from you earlier, but that idea that there was no protection for people, so often these cases just ended up in court. Is that the place where things are still legislated?
The kind of 30,000-foot view in terms of whether the Fair Housing Act is enforced is definitely tied to courts, and in particular, this issue of disparate impact, whether if you do something as a lender or as a landlord that looks race neutral but has a strong racial impact, like not accepting vouchers, whether you might be held accountable under the Fair Housing Act. That's been a huge problem. There was some progress over the last few years in extending, particularly since the Supreme Court ruling in 2015, that disparate impact and housing discrimination would be given more weight. But now, again, current federal administration is starting to pull back on that commitment.
So, Eric, we just have a minute until the break. Are you seeing more of this action in this current administration because there have been fewer protections?
Well, we focus on state court action, so it's a bit different than the federal laws. But wholly, you know, looking and yes is the short answer.
Well, we're going to take a bit of a break. Bambi Hayes-Brown is with us, Eric Provitt and Dan Immergluck. We're talking about the Fair Housing Act. 50 years later, is it delivering? Is it fulfilling its promise of fair, indiscriminate housing here in Georgia and really across the country? This is On Second Thought. Stay with us. This is On Second Thought from Georgia Public Broadcasting. I'm Virginia Prescott and talking with a number of people today about fair and affordable housing. This is 50 years after the Fair Housing Act was signed, banning racial discrimination. Well, you can't go far in Georgia these days without hearing people talking about how much building is going on, how expensive it is to live, and a lot of gentrification. That's one of the things that we heard oftentimes traveling across Georgia. And we're digging into that a little bit, especially about fair housing practices in terms of discrimination with Bambi Hayes-Brown, President and CEO of Georgia Advancing Communities Together. Eric Provitt is with us. He's a staff attorney with the Atlanta Volunteer Lawyers Foundation working on federal housing. And also Dan Immergluck is with us. He's a professor in the Urban Studies Institute. That's at Georgia State University. So I'm going to pick this up again. Bambi, you've been president and CEO of Georgia ACT for almost a year now. What have you found some of the most effective ways to support fair and affordable housing here in Georgia?
What I found is some of the most effective ways is definitely dealing with systems change and policy change. And we need that throughout the state of Georgia, in your rural areas and your suburban areas, as well as your urban areas. I know the city of Atlanta started with an inclusionary zoning passing of the ordinance where developers must include a certain percentage of affordable housing units when they build those units. However, it doesn't go far enough. We definitely need more affordable housing units. We also need preservation of our existing affordable housing units for both renters and for homeowners, and advocating for that policy change on the local, state, and federal level, looking at increased funding for voucher holders, for people who are senior citizens, those are who are disabled, those who are at or below 30% of HUD's median income, which are disproportionately affected by the affordable housing crisis. Advocating on our state level for stronger landlord-tenant laws. Unfortunately, Georgia is not very friendly towards tenants. So looking at strengthening those laws to assist tenants who need not only affordable housing, but who also need healthy housing.
Well, this is a long list. You've got a big job in front of you, obviously. Yes. And we've heard from in Atlanta, the developers of the Beltline, initially they were going to set aside a certain amount of units for affordable housing. That wasn't deemed to be enough. There was a push for more. Why is it so difficult to create affordable housing? Eric, what have you seen?
So I'm not sure that it is difficult. I think it just takes the will. And so if we work and we operate in a capitalistic society, the least and the lost are often not thought of. And so if we have those advocacy groups on the ground that are pushing the powers that be, I think that's what creates the change, along with good lawyers that are willing to file good lawsuits.
There you go. And that's the business that you're in here, helping out people to advocate. And this is something you've been doing a great deal with on Atlanta's west side. Can you tell us about the community that you serve there?
Yeah, so I work inside of a school, Hollis Innovation Academy, where I support the students as well as the community in Vine City, English Avenue, AUC, and Ashview Heights. And so we're working to prevent displacement and prevent gentrification by keeping legacy residents in the community.
Eric, you were a mortgage lender before you became a lawyer. This is a big career change.
Not things that I like to talk about.
Well, we won't get to that. We'll leave that. But tell me about your perspective and how that has changed in the time in between from trying to not lending, in many cases, money to people who needed it for housing and now advocating for them.
And so I think the biggest change is the perception of individuals that live in the communities that I now represent. Prior to my working in the neighborhoods, I had a view of what folks that were renters in neighborhoods like that, what their model was or what they looked like. And I'm coming to find out that it's about as far from east as west is from my perception, 5-10 years ago, in terms of what actually exists today.
So, Bambi, this is something you've been working on. One initiative was in the DeKalb County Housing Authority Veterans Affairs Supportive Housing, or VASH, program. So that is something that looks like it's been a success. Why do you think that's been a success?
Well, I think the main reason why it's been a success is because you had two federal agencies working together, which previously was unheard of. And they were able to break down those barriers and work with the local VAs and the local housing authorities to provide those housing for our veterans. And along with that came supportive services, which I think was a very important piece, whether it was substance abuse issues or mental health issues that the veteran faced. The Veterans Administration was able to address those issues. And then as a part of my duty when I worked at the DeKalb Housing Authority was to transition those veterans into permanent housing. And I did have one veteran to transition from homeless to home ownership. And I think mm-hmm. that was a very telling story and a great success. And we would like to see more of those.
Yeah, so that can happen. It does happen. And when it does happen, how does that affect a person's life going forward?
It affects a person's life going forward in tremendous ways, not only with the family, with the education for the children, better education opportunities, better health indicators, better economic indicators, because we know that a large proportion of African-American wealth is tied to home ownership. And so it's a win-win for everyone involved when we're able to help people attain affordable housing.
Bambi Hayes Brown, president and CEO of Georgia ACT. Eric Provitt, he works with the Georgia Housing Corps Fellow. He's a Georgia Housing Corps Fellow and staff attorney. And Dan Immergluck, professor of urban studies at Georgia State University. We're going to take a hard turn now, but I want to thank you so much for filling us in.